Hello, buddy. Good morning. Welcome to the United Stands. I'm Mark Goldbridge, and this is your latest Manchester United news as Amrim faces a player revolt in January with up to five players looking to get out in this World Cup year. How does he solve that problem? Does he need to solve that problem? Also, we've got Wayne Rooney talking about Ruben Amorim and how he thinks he did after that Sunderland game. Also, Peter Schmeichel, Man United goalkeeping legend, giving his opinion on Lemens, and also as well some quite disturbing stuff coming out from the club again. Essentially, the cuts are starting to bite. You can't sack half a workforce and not expect kickback. And whilst Man United will always do their best to spin positives about how great everything is, the reality behind the scenes isn't great. I mean, somebody said to me in the summer from within the club that Man United is like a lovely bowl of soup, but then you've got to try and eat it with your hands tied behind your back. And I think that's what always is in my mind when I think about Man United. There's so much potential there, but you try and eat a bowl of soup with your hands tied behind your back, it's difficult. And I think that is ultimately the problem at Manchester United. It's a bit of a shit show, if we're being completely honest. But we'll come on to that, because there's embarrassing stuff about youth teams turning up and having to borrow shorts and socks or whatever it is. Facilities are crap for the youth. All that will happen there, by the way, is if you cut costs in one area to benefit another area, you'll cause a problem there as well. So all these 13, 14, 15-year-olds that could be the next Beckham, the next Rashford, the next Greenwood, the next Scholes, they'll go to Man City. That's what'll happen. So if we want to, you know, if we're cutting costs in the youth for the first team, we'll end up paying the price in the future. And you know, who is the youth player that's coming into the first team at the moment? So, hello, Mark. Great to hear you well, says Tony. You too as well. Okay, let's fly into topic number one, because we've got quite a few to get through on this morning, this show. So, effectively, reports coming in that there are a number of players looking to, who want game time, basically. It's World Cup year. We play one game a week, and certain players are not getting anywhere near the minutes they would. To be honest with you, look, reading some of these reports, obviously we spoke about Maynou at the weekend, so I sort of want to leave that one because it's quite obvious. Xerxes was in the Dutch squad, can't get near the Man United first 11 at the moment. Agate, first teamer for Uruguay, didn't start in the last international break. Harry Maguire still would love to go to the World Cup with England, not getting minutes now, although he did start against Brentford. So there's a number of players there that could, in January, be asking to leave again, and it's whether Amrim and the club will let them go. It's a difficult one, because I think with every one of those players we're talking about, I'm not so sure that any of them get in my starting lineup, bar probably Maynou, although I would pick Maynou and Agate over Casemiro and Bruno. But this is, Onana's to blame for this, you know, because if we hadn't lost in the Carabao Cup, there would have been another game for these players to get game time. The big problem you've got at the moment, let's talk about Joshua Xerxes. The big problem you've got if you're Xerxes is that it's year two. And we've got this thing at the moment. We had it with Sesko. We've seen it with Wirtz. You'll see it with Isak. You'll see it with Altameda. You'll see it with any new signing. There's just this modern phenomenon to try and call a new signing a flop. We saw it with Agate at the start of last season. I mean, I've never really understood it with Agate. There's people in our fan base who just can't stand him. They abuse him under his social media posts. They've never liked him. I don't know why. Like certain players, I look at them and I go, yeah, I sort of get it. They're quite dislikable. Agate's got to be the most friendly looking player there is. Like, I don't get why people don't like him, but look, that's a different conversation. My point is, for Xerxes, it's season two. He's getting less time than he did in season one. In season one, he was potentially going back to Italy, and Amrim basically persuaded him to stay, and he was happy in January. He was doing well from January to April. Then he got injured, and now he can't get anywhere near the team, having had an injury in pre-season. I think that injury in pre-season has set him back, but he's now miles behind. You know, Mount's way ahead of him. Cunha, Mbeumo, Ahmad. He's not a midfielder either. And Sesko's playing up front. So there's no pathway to the first team for him. You could say the same for probably Harry Maguire now, to be honest. I don't think he'll get that much game time. I think he only gets brought on for the last 10 minutes to give him some game time. I don't think we need to make that substitution at the back. In fact, sometimes I think it's annoying how we keep making substitutions at the back. But Ugarte, Mainoo, we've mentioned them as well, Xerxes. There are players that it's hard to see how they're going to get game time. And we are looking at bringing players into Manchester United, of course, but this is part of managing. This is part of being a manager at Manchester United. It's difficult. He's going to get he might have knocks on the door to Omar Berada about bringing players in January, but there's going to be knocks on his door saying, I want to go in January again. There will be, because we're playing one game a week. If I'm Joshua Xerxes, I'm looking at it and I'm going, international break, I'm sat on my arse. I have been sat, you know, training with the Netherlands. I'm sat on my arse, World Cup year. After the international break, Liverpool, I'm not going to play in that game. Brighton, I'm not going to play in that game. Forest and Spurs away, I'm not going to play in that game. And I'm going to be sat in the next international break. And then it's nearly Christmas. So players will only sit there for so long. I don't think they're knocking on the door yet, but they will only sit there for so long. And on top of that, we've had bad results. We've had injuries. It's not like you sat there waiting for United to have bad results or Man United to have injuries. We've had the injuries. You think about the injuries we've already had this season. Mazraoui's had two, Mason Mount, Cunha, Casemiro's been suspended, Sesko's not had match fitness. So and we've had lots of bad results. So there's been plenty of time where you could put your hand up if you're Mainoo or Ugarte or Xerxes and go, hey, where's my opportunity? But playing one game a week, it's really, really difficult. I mean, if you're Cunha or Mount at the moment, one game a week's not great because one of you starts, one of you's on the bench, you might get 20 minutes, and then another week goes. So in some ways, the squad is too big. In some ways, we are swamped in certain positions, centre-back and number 10. But I think some of these players will be knocking on the door, and I think the reports are correct because when you look at it, Xerxes probably got no chance of going to the World Cup now, but if you went and started playing in January and the Netherlands get a couple of injuries, maybe you do. Ugarte may well can think he's a starter for Uruguay, but he didn't start one of the games. Maybe he loses his place if he's not playing. Mainoo, same as Xerxes, probably not going to be going to the World Cup now because we're into international break too and he's not in the squad. But you never know. If you get a loan move in January and you start playing, maybe you do feel your way back in. So you can understand it. And also longer term than the World Cup, you're going to be looking for a move in the summer anyway. So I think all these things are going to happen. And don't underestimate the power of the World Cup. I mean, I told you about it about 8 months ago. I think it was January time. There are players at Man United who don't fancy it sometimes. They don't fancy it in training. They don't fancy it at the weekend. And that leads into, I've got a bit of tightness in my calf or whatever. Have you noticed this season we're not getting a lot of that? You know, I'm not saying that certain players feign injury, but it's funny how I don't know how Luke Shaw and Mason Mount out of it because he's already had an injury. But I don't know how Luke Shaw has stayed fit for the last 6 months. I don't know. It's a miracle. Has anyone checked in on Jesus? Because there's something miraculous going on here. This guy has barely played football for 2 years and suddenly he's been fit for the last 6 months, playing every week. So don't be disillusioned about the fact that the World Cup is important to a lot of people. It's something in your career. And we know some of these players value playing for their international club more than they do for Manchester United. So I agree. I think we will get some knocks on the door of Amrin. The question will be, will Man United let them go? Is the squad too big? When we're lacking in the midfield. I mean, I would not be letting Mainoo or Ugarte go in any circumstances unless somebody else was coming in. I think with Xerxes, we are quite stacked in the number 10 position. I'm never a big fan of keeping a player just because something might happen. I think it's unfair. But in the midfield, something will happen. And I don't think we could let Ugarte or Mainoo go, even though Mainoo's probably going to be knocking on the door and maybe Ugarte will as well. I think it's interesting with Ugarte as well. As I said, I think some people, I actually thought he played well against Brentford. I was disappointed he got subbed. I didn't really understand why he didn't start against Sunderland, but it may well be that Amrin doesn't see a place for him in the team. I don't know. But that's certainly something to keep an eye on, of course. Just want to talk about Lemens very quickly as well, before we talk about what Wayne Rooney said about Ruben Amorim. So basically, Peter Schmeichel, ex-legend, well, legend, you're not an ex-legend, are you? You used to be a legend, you're not anymore. I'm sorry, mate, you've crossed the line. You said something about Disney and now you're not a legend anymore. You just can't say that. Of course, Peter Schmeichel is still a legend of Manchester United. He's basically been talking about Lemens, and I was listening to what he said and I thought a lot of it makes sense because obviously he's come into Manchester United. He came in and was one of the best goalkeepers in the world, so he knows the pathway. And I think when people like Van der Sar, Schmeichel, De Gea talk about Man United, it's a very unique position, and all three of them have transitioned from new signing to being, you know, United legends, really. So what did he have to say about Lemens? Basically said, look, very, very positive stuff, but the most important thing he said is that the mistakes will happen. It's when the mistakes happen, it's how you react to that. And that's true. I remember Ole Gunnar Solskjaer when he first came in as the interim manager, and we just kept winning and winning and winning. And he was in an interview and he said, I don't want to stop winning, but we won't win forever. And when we do lose, it's how we react to that. Because when you're winning and everything's going your way, you think you're unbeatable. It's when you lose, can you get back to winning again? And it's true. And also, I think it's the same with Lemens. He looked really good on Saturday, but he will make a mistake. He'll make a mistake, and it's how he reacts to that and how everybody else reacts to that. Personally, for me, look at Bienda, look at Onana. I mean, come on. I mean, Alisson makes mistakes. David Raya makes mistakes. Goalkeepers make mistakes. Strikers miss one-on-ones. Wingers miss open goals. You know, wingers shoot when they should pass. They're mistakes. When goalkeepers make mistakes, it tends to cost you a goal, but they're the same thing. Everybody makes mistakes. So, you know, Schmeichel's right. I think it's when he makes that mistake, how does he react to that? How do we react to that? I would hope that we're not going to be a fan base that just jumps on everybody for every mistake. You know, if you're looking at a pathway to a future, mistakes and losses are fine. It's having the pathway, isn't it? But I thought it was a good comment from Schmeichel, because the mistakes will happen. And I think fans should prepare themselves for that. How are you going to react when he makes a mistake? Because personally, I think we should be going, we're in this for the long run. He's the right guy. Obviously, I'm not going to run away with just one performance, but, you know, I think we saw, I know it's only one game, but I think we did see a big difference on Saturday. And I think there's something there to build for the future with, which is what I want Amorim to do in general, really. Obviously, I don't think he's doing that in the midfield. I don't think he's necessarily doing that in other areas of the pitch, but this is what we want to see at Manchester United. Martin Saunders with a super chat says, I get the players' frustration, but Amorim sees them in training and some need to accept at United their bench players, too many weak personalities at United. I completely agree with that, Martin, but at the end of the day, if you are Joshua Zirkzee, for example, or Kobbie Mainoo, or Ugarte or Harry Maguire, then okay, I'm not good enough to start for the manager is not the problem. It's I want to go and start for somebody. I think that's the conversation we're talking about. I don't think anybody's saying all four of them should be starting. I don't agree with that, but they will knock on the door, because what the problem with the Man United squad is it's too big. It's a very big squad, and I think many of us think it's not got enough quality in it. So it's a double-edged sword, really. The squad's too big and doesn't have enough good players in it. I mean, I would still be looking to buy three players for the first team, maybe four. So we have a huge squad, but I want four players for the first team. So we have a big, big problem, because we're not in Europe. We're not in the Carabao Cup. We play one game a week, and we've got a squad that really could probably deal with Europe as well. Not saying we'd be good in Europe, but that's a European squad. It's too big. So if we're not in Europe next year, that squad needs cutting. We all want to bring four players in, but you need to get rid of eight. Like, that squad is a European squad. Not on quality, but on quantity, that's a very big squad. Like, if you're playing one game a week and you've got Cunha and Mbeumo starting, what's happening to Mount? What's happening to Xerxes? You know, if Ahmad's playing right wing back, what's happening to Mazraoui and Dalot? So there's lots of people sat on the bench, and unless Amorim changes the team or unless we get injuries, they won't get game time. And that's what I think we're talking about here. People are just going to be like, there are no minutes for me. There are no minutes. If we're not in Europe next season, then this squad's going to need to get cut a lot more. Xerxes issue, another red flag for Ruben Amorim, player there, says class of 99. I would like you to expand on what that means, because I don't know what that means. Look, from Ruben Amorim's point of view, you may well know that you're not going to use Xerxes a lot, but would you sell him? I wouldn't sell him, because I'm like, this club gets a lot of injuries. Just a thought, what if Man United could buy Nuno Mendes for 50 million last January? I think Amorim wanted him, but he's the best left back in the world. I mean, I don't think it was ever realistic, to be fair. The Xerxes thing I don't understand, says Simply Red. Been treated unfairly and not been given a chance. At least Ugarte, Mainoo get a few minutes here and there. Thank you very much, Simply Red. Players who lost to Tottenham and finished 15th want more game time, says Keel. Hello, Mark. Great to hear you out. I've done that one. Thank you very much. And Red Ed says, you don't rate Bruno as a captain, so who's your next pick? I would go for Hjelmeland, says Red Ed. I think from the current squad that we have at the moment, I would go for De Ligt or Mazraoui or Cunha or Mbeumo. I think these sort of people are probably the quality that we need, but we might end up buying somebody in, I suppose. Let me talk to you about what Wayne Rooney had to say anyway. I quite liked this comment from him. He was talking about Ruben Amorim at the weekend. Well, first of all, he said about Sesko, I think he's a handful. He uses his body well. He challenges for balls and he makes it easier for Cunha and Mbeumo and Mount. I think Sesko is a different profile of striker. There's no doubt about it. We've seen it already with the long ball. You can't play that long ball into Rasmus. You can't play that long ball into Rashford. You can't play that long ball into Martial. That's no criticism of those players. They've got their own strengths. I mean, look at Rasmus at Napoli now. They're feeding him and he's scoring goals. Rashford at Barcelona, he's a winger really, isn't he? Martial was a very, very good forward. He just wasn't particularly big. But when you've got a 6'4" striker, in a way, you're a bloody idiot if you don't play to that strength. So we have a guy now that we can literally pump the ball up to. You know, you can alleviate the pressure. I think sometimes when you're a centre-back in the modern game, the ball goes to your goalkeeper and you're like, oh, shit, another night in the trenches. Because you've got to show for the ball, you've got to receive the ball. Everyone knows that everyone plays out from the back, so you're going to get the ball under pressure. You know, sometimes as a defender, you just want to defend. You don't want to be defending and then, oh, God, I've got to get the ball now and play through the bloody passing lines, you know, playing bloody triangles. Sometimes you want to see that ball flying 50 yards in front of you and going, I got a breather. Let's push up. Let's clear our lines. Let's move up the pitch. And look, we're not here on a morning show to talk about the changing landscape of football. But you know it as well as I do. You can turn on a League Two game and they're passing out from the back because of bloody Pep Guardiola. I'm a firm believer in variety, unpredictability. And to be fair, Onana was hitting a lot of long balls last season. You know, they're going to Ahmad who can't win it. They're going to Garnacho who can't win it. They're going to Rasmus who can't win it against two centre-backs who are bigger and stronger than him. So it's not like we haven't hit the long balls under Amorim. But with Sesko, you've got somebody that is a handful for defenders and he can hold the ball up. And I think it's a positive. On Amorim, this is what Rooney had to say. He said, in relation to the Sunderland game, Amorim changed his style a bit this weekend by being more direct with the goalkeeper and Sesko, and it worked. So you have to give him credit for that. The result was big and you want to see consistency, winning 4 or 5 games in a row. For Amorim, time will tell. He's a really good young manager, but what we've seen so far doesn't tell us that. He'll be doing everything he can to turn that around. The game has changed a lot. You look for the leaders, but there are not many of them in world football. You hope they can pull together and get through it. It's a difficult period. I think that's a very pragmatic, honest approach from Wayne Rooney, because nowhere in there is we're back. He's going to win 4 or 5 games in a row and United are going to be fine with Ruben Amorim. I think it's like, look, he got the result on Saturday. Fair play. It's a big result, but he needs more than that. You know, he needs to go and win more games. He's a good manager, but we haven't seen that. He's, you know, hopefully they can pull it together and get through it. And then he mentions the leaders thing, and then there's not many leaders in world football. And that's true. You know, I think that there's a lot of talent out there. I mean, you and I can both go and say, go and get this player, go and get that player. You know, they're talented. But as we had the conversation about Belaba, is he mentally, you know, the right, has he got the right mentality for Manchester United? And I'm not necessarily so sure about that. So it's not just about buying players. It's about bringing in the players with the right mentalities. Certainly, this is why I like Stiller at Stuttgart. I think he's the right age profile. He's a leader at Stuttgart. I think those sort of players become really... Essentially, I can't remember if anybody ever did this, but I remember a conversation about it years ago where it was like, why would you not try and buy the captain from every decent team in Europe? Because surely you're going to end up with a load of leaders there. And it's an interesting point, isn't it? I mean, look, you're not going to get Bayern Munich's captain. You're not going to get Barcelona captain. You're not going to get Real Madrid's captain. But you might get, like, Villarreal's captain. You might get AC Milan's captain. You might get Monaco's captain. You might get Stuttgart's captain. You know, we do need leaders. And I agree with Wayne Rooney about this, that the world has changed a lot. They're not growing on trees. There's not leaders everywhere with the right mentalities. But what will get Man United out of this position is leaders. I'm a firm believer in that. And I think it's interesting that Wayne Rooney alludes to that. I think Man United will get out of this position with consistent leaders with the right mentality, which is why I like Mbeumo, and it's why I like Cunha, and it's why I think Sesko and Lemens could be quite interesting as well. Because for younger players, what we're hearing about them... We heard it about Sesko when he first came in, and we've seen it in his interviews, dedicated, hardworking professional. You know, being a footballer, you listen to Sesko, being a footballer is his profession. You know, he's not a footballer because he wants a boot deal or because he wants a clothing company. He is a professional. And hopefully Lemens is going to be the same. But we do need to bring more leaders in. I definitely agree. But as Wayne Rooney alludes to, as many of you, I mean, the interesting thing about the Wayne Rooney comment is that I think it's just very similar to what I read in our chat every morning. You know, you hope he can pull it together. It's a difficult period for him. I'm still very, I'm very much like that with Amrin. And I know people don't like people who sit on the bench, sit on the fence. That's the five people who want to leave, sit on the fence. But you can, you know, as I say, not everything's red and green. The world is everything in between. And my honest answer is here. And I find it very strange because I'm not normally like this. I have strength in my own conviction to make a decision. And if I'm forced to make a decision, I will make a decision on this. But honestly, since the Brentford loss, I've been very honest. I don't think changing the manager will make us any better. And I'm not convinced that this manager is going to do it either. I'm sort of still like that. I don't... Over the last 10 years, I've been firmly keep the manager or firmly replace the manager. But I'm like sort of... I am honestly like... I am like that at the moment. I'm undecided. John United says, we've got six potential options for the number 10 role. We want Amrin to make changes in certain positions, but with just one game a week, it's not realistic to rotate players constantly. That would be chaos. He's got too many players, John. You know, going back to what we were talking about at the start, he's got too many players. Zirk, some people don't want to have difficult conversations. These reports about players knocking on the door for January... Look, Harry Maguire will probably stay till the summer, if we're being completely honest. Agate depends on what happens with Uruguay in the next two international breaks. Seriously, you know, I think he would go and knock on the door at least. Mainu will knock on the door again. I think Xerxes will have to knock on the door again. There might be other players at that point. Like, there might be other players that, you know, when Martinez comes back, Luke Shaw might not get any game time. And staying fit won't be enough for him to get in the England squad. So, you know, there could be a few people that are going to knock on the door. Exactly. But the reality is the squad is imbalanced, but it's also heavy in certain areas. We have got too many players. And look, I'm doing my career mode at the moment. And this is not real life. I'm doing my career mode. I'm playing yesterday, doing quite well, actually. Check it out on my channel. And because I'm playing a back four, I'm playing Martinez and De Ligt. And they're playing really, really well. And I'm halfway through game three and I went, shit, Lenny Yoro. I'm not used him once. And everyone's like, free Yoro, free Yoro. And I'm like, although it's a computer game, I like Yoro. But I need to win games. And because it's career mode, I'm not in Europe. And I've been knocked out of the Carabao Cup. We won't say anything about that. But I'm not in Europe. So I've got one game a week. And I need to win these games because I need to get into the Champions League. I want to be in the top five. So I'm picking Martinez and De Ligt and I'm comfortable with them, but I'm not using Yoro. I'm not, the games are quite tight, so I'm not bringing him on for the last 10 minutes. I like Yoro. He's really, really good, but I can't get him in the team. And that can be a problem as well. I think people look at it and go, Amorim is, you know, free Xerxes or free Mainu or this, that, and the other. And, you know, sometimes it might be, you know, the Mainu situation's a joke. Like, he should be using Mainu. I completely agree. But in that case, if I was playing two centre-backs and I was the manager of Man United and you're all going free Yoro, I would say to you, look, honestly, I agree with you, free Yoro. I really, really like him. But De Ligt and Martinez are my starting centre-backs and I can only pick two. So, and I'm not bringing him on for the last 10 minutes in tight games because that's not fair. Sometimes you can't get a player in the team. So, Joff says, Yoro just started. Yeah, mate, we're not living in a real world at the moment. We're talking about a hypothetical computer game, but bringing it into real life. You know, Amorim might really like Xerxes, but he can't give him minutes. But if you're Xerxes, you've got to say go. Look, another way of looking at it is, because I want to talk about the youth now. Another way of looking at it with the youth is Heaven, Leon, Obi. Now, I wasn't going to go here, but I will. Heaven, Leon, Obi, maybe Kone at some point. I've heard about, like, Jim Thwaites is apparently doing really well as well. But Leon, Obi, Heaven are all players that I would expect to be getting some sort of minutes at Manchester United. Not then. When are they going to get minutes? Obi can't get on the bench. Leon ain't, you know, he picks Dalot ahead of him at left wing back when Dorgu doesn't play. And Heaven, well, Luke Shaw's playing ahead of him and Martinez will be back soon. So I sort of look at those three players and go, should we not be thinking about loaning them in January? Like, I was talking to some Coventry City fans in the summer and they were like, we need a striker. I mean, they've scored more bloody goals than anyone. They don't need a striker. But I was saying, you know what? I'd love Obi to go to Coventry in the Championship. I think that'd be brilliant. You know, Championship football, working hard to get in a team like that, playing, you know, week in, week out, sometimes twice a week. I mean, this is development. This is what development's all about. What development are we offering to Obi, Leon and Heaven at the moment? Because some of you might disagree with me. I've never been a big fan of, but you're training with the first team. I think when you're a 16-year-old and, you know, you're coming up from the under-18s to train with the first team, it's great for a few weeks. But a whole season of it, nobody can tell me that Heaven is getting more out of training with the first team than he would be being on loan at Preston North End or Lille or whatever. And that's the problem with this season. I'm seeing it's way too early in the season to say this, but it won't be long till Christmas. You know, it won't be long. I've already had the message from my auntie saying, what do you want for Christmas? And she's always early, but it makes me think, shit, it's coming. And I think that it's not just about Mainu, Xerxes, Ugarte. It's also about Obi. I mean, in March, people were saying free Obi starting ahead of Rasmus. It's now October. No one talks about him. So why 6 months ago was people wanting him to start and now no one's even bloody talking about him? And that to me is fine because we're fans and I know why we're not talking about him because Sesko's here and that's, you know, just the way it is. But what are we doing to manage his career? What are we doing to manage Leon's career? What are we doing to manage Heaven's career? Because I think we should be looking at it and going, this squad's massive, let's loan them out. It's good for their development. I don't think it's good for 17-year-olds who've already played for Man United to be, yeah, but you're training with the first team. Training with the first team is not the same as playing competitive football. And we should be managing our youth a little bit better as well. Now, that's got nothing to do with Xerxes knocking on the door or anybody else. I'm sure that will happen. They're senior pros. But we also have to look at development of our young players. At what point is Ruben Amorim going to go, you know what? Let's get Kone on the bench. Let's get Obi on the bench because I'd like to give them some minutes. He's not in a position to give them minutes at the moment. I mean, look at the next four games. Liverpool away, Brighton at home, Forest away, Spurs away. At what point is he going to get half an hour to go, Obi, go out there, no pressure. Zesco, off you come. We're not that team this year. We're not going to be that team this year. It's not going to happen this year. We're not going to be in a position where we're 3 or 4 nil up at Old Trafford and we go, Obi, heaven, on you go for the last half an hour. So, tough fixtures are coming, says Fenke. So, look, the squad's too big. Amorim's got a lot of options, but that squad is too big. And it's a unique thing for us. We haven't had this for a very long time. When you've got Europa League or the Champions League and the Carabao Cup and you're playing two games a week, sometimes the squad feels very, very small. But when you're playing one game a week and you're only going to be playing one game a week for the whole season, because we could get knocked out of the FA Cup in the third round, that squad's too big. And you've got to, I think we've got to start looking at loans. I really do. Your understanding of double-edged sword is wrong, says Michael Speaks. No, it's not. A double-edged sword means that both sides of it are sharp. Both sides of it are an issue, which is exactly what I was saying. Do you think Ronaldo was right about Man United? He's a legend, says Hello. Depends what particular point you're talking about. I mean, if you're talking about facilities and, you know, the lack of ambition at the football club, I think he's right. You just add it to the list of incompetencies of the ownership, overspending on an area of the squad that was already inflated while ignoring the obvious, as Elliot Wallace. I don't think, look, we're never going to get... we're never going to get an apology. We're never going to get an explanation. But I don't know why I'm looking down there. It's because I'm itching my foot. I think the summer transfer window is... There's a lot of things that have happened at Man United over the years that I'd love to know the answer to. Like, I'd love to know the answer to. But I'd really love to know who sat there at Man United in that boardroom and went, let's spend £200 million on the front three, but let's do nothing with the midfield. You know, I'd love to know who came up with that strategy because it's ridiculous. Look, if you've got a boat, yeah, and you load one end of the boat with all your gold and all your food, and then the other end of your boat, you don't put anything there. What happens to the boat? It sinks. Now, I'm not saying that Man United are going to sink because we've overloaded our front three and left everywhere else. But I'm surprised we haven't distributed our spend across the whole boat. There's no balance in that midfield for a start, really. Squad is so bad that we're speculating what would happen if we get this player or that player, where other teams are thinking which player to play for next game, says Seth. I think, personally... I think that the January transfer window needs to be quite significant. As I say, I think we're going to get a few people knocking on the door wanting to go. And I don't think that's going to change. And if we're going to let them go, we need to have replacements coming in as well. So that, look, if Ugarte or Mainoo gets loaned, someone needs to come in. I don't think... What I'm trying to say is, if Ugarte and Mainoo knock on the door in January and say, look, I want game time, it's my last chance, you're not picking me, I've lost my place for the fucking World Cup, I want to play football, and I want to play football now, I've sat on my arse for 5 months, I want to go, I think United should go, you can go, and here's a replacement. What we shouldn't do is go, you can't go, because we don't want to spend any money. And that's what my fear is. You might get, let's say, Mainoo going, look, I wanted to go in August, You didn't let me go. I've worked really hard. I'm still not getting game time. You clearly don't like me. Let me go and play somewhere else now. No. That would be wrong on the club, in my opinion, because we're not using him. He wants to play football. It would be cheap to say no. What we should do is let him go and bring a replacement in. That's what I think we should do, because I think January needs to be a big month for Manchester United. I think there are opportunities certainly for us to go and do stuff. And going back to that question, by the way, somebody did say quite rightly, okay, you say you're balanced, but push comes to shove, which way do you go on Amrin? Is he going to survive or is he going to get sacked? He's going to get sacked. If I have to choose whether he's going to survive or he's going to get sacked, he's going to get sacked, because the only manager in my lifetime that hasn't been sacked is Sir Alex Ferguson. And very few people walk out the door to a guard of honour. So he's going to get sacked. I don't know when he's going to get sacked, but he will get sacked. That's if I have to say that, the truth is I'm not sure what's going to happen with Amrin. I'm like, there's good and there's bad. I want him to survive. I want him to do well. I can't see a manager out there that I actually want. So I'm sort of conflicted. But if I had to make a choice, if somebody said you can't sit on the fence, you have to make a choice. Is he going to get sacked or is he going to survive? He's going to get sacked. Because I think all the ingredients of every sacking I've seen from Ten Hag to Moyes is there already. The over-reliance on the wrong players, the leadership team, the same leadership team that sacked other managers, the owners letting him down in key areas. The bomb squad removal was a distraction. We should have cleared out more players whether permanently or on loan. That's on Ineos, says John. Well, John, I always said that. I always said that, like, this bomb squad thing, who started it? Who actually came up with the term, the bomb squad? Where did it actually come from? Because I think that the removal of the bomb squad was pure spin anyway. They were sort of held up as the negative group, right? They needed to go, but what role did they have in the Europa League final? None. None of them played. Sancho wasn't here. Antony wasn't here. Malacia wasn't here. Rashford wasn't here. And Garnacho got benched. What role did they have in his finishing 15th? Not much, because most of them, well, Sancho wasn't there all year. Rashford, Antony and Malacia were gone in January. So we did get sold a load of spin bollocks that... There was 11 players that played in the Europa League final against Spurs, and they should have been sold at full time. It was an embarrassing performance. They're all still here. Obviously, Rasmus and Onana aren't, but the vast majority are still here. And we got sold a lie. This whole bomb squad was like, get rid of the bomb squad and everything will be okay. And I used to check myself going, the bomb squad were nothing to do with the Europa League final. They were nothing to do with finishing 15th. But people swallowed it, you know. Thank you very much for that. Do you think Stiller could be too slow for the Premier League, says Mufasa? I don't think he's slow. No, I don't think he's slow, no. I mean, look, you know... I don't think speed in the midfield is as important as it is up front or at centre back or at right back or on the wing anyway. So, Ange going to be sacked, says. Ange is going to be sacked twice and Amrim's still here. Yeah, fair point. Fair point. Okay, let me talk to you about what's going on with regards to the. Some breaking news coming out from Laurie Whitwell this morning. I've sort of left it towards the end of the show because I don't find this stuff that interesting, but it's just another indicator of the problems that are going on at Manchester United. So basically, Sir Jim Radcliffe's cost-cutting regime has come with consequences, not least concerning the Man United Academy building, which dates back to 2002 and had a refurbishment in 2017. There are allegations that toilets have been left uncleaned, bins unemptied, and pitch perimeters worn and littered, with complaints made that there are not enough maintenance staff employed to maintain standards. Exterior signs are fading and machinery has been left around the site. All those who wear club tracksuits, including academy coaches and first team analysts, but excluding players Ruben Amorim and his coaching staff, now have to wash their own kits. A shortage of staff is alleged to have played a factor in an embarrassing episode where Man United's under-13s had to ask to borrow shorts and socks when playing against Everton at Carrington last month. A shortage of staff, obviously we've mentioned that as well. So that's coming out this morning that, like, basically the youth setup is an embarrassment. There is talk of a whole new youth building and facilities being built at some point in the next few years or months, but money will need to be found for it as well. Look, in essence, all I really want to talk about is the first team and what we're doing on the pitch. But we do hear about the women's team having to get changed in cabins and, you know, the youth team having to borrow kit from Everton. It's not what you'd expect of Real Madrid or Barcelona or a big club. And we are a big club. It's embarrassing. It is embarrassing. Like Maliki says, it is embarrassing. But it won't get the headlines because as long as United try and sign Belabor in January, no one gives a shit. But I've always said this, like, Man United are the masters at spinning positives. But scratch the surface. What did I say to you at the start of the show? And we can repeat it again. I was told in the summer that Man United as a football club is like a lovely bowl of soup, but you've got to eat it with your hands tied behind your back. Mess. And that's Man United. We should be Michelin star, and we're not. We're a roadside cafe. I'm not knocking roadside cafes. They tend to do very, very nice burgers and stuff like that. But, you know, you put your life in your hands when you eat one. My point is, Man United should not be operating like this. And as much as people think we're back, and as much as people think we will get back, and as much as people think that Manchester United are going to mix it up with the best in Europe again, I think when you scratch the surface, we're on a precipice. We're on the edge of a cliff. In the sense that there's a lot wrong at the football club. We've never been in more debt. We've never been so bad on the pitch. I mean, it is quite surprising because you do see people saying, where are the protests? Where is the movement to remove the Glazers? Why are fans just sat doing nothing? It's never been so bad. And it has never been so bad. Like, factually, it's never been so bad. We've never been in so much debt. We've never been so bad on the pitch. We've never had a squad as bad as this. And yet, everyone's just sort of sat there going, oh, hopefully things are going to be okay. They've never been this bad. They've never been this bad. And, you know, it doesn't take much to uncover issues like this one that Laurie Whitwell's uncovered. The under-13s having to borrow kit. Everybody apart from the first team having to wash their own kit. I mean, I've played for teams when I was a kid where you don't wash your own bloody kit, where it's all provided for you. And Man United are making people wash their own bloody kit. It's mad. But, to all those people who celebrated a year ago, people being made redundant and fired, you know, good, honest, working people out of a job, that was always going to bite us. The numbers that were put out were proven to be inaccurate. There was bullshit about United having 1,200 staff and more than anybody else. And then it was proven that Liverpool have got the same. Well, we're not anymore because we've got half the staff of them. And that Man City staff were in part of different groups. So that's why it made it look like they didn't have many. We've cut our workforce by 50%. That's going to hit productivity. That's going to hit efficiency. My concern when you're talking about the youth is that we will lose young players because I know what it's like. You know, Seb plays football. My daughter plays football. So you're in these circles of parents who want the best for their kids. I see it at an amateur level. you know, parents shouting on the sidelines, why is my kid not getting minutes? You know, he hasn't got his top, this, that and the other. This is amateur football. Can you imagine what those parents are like at under 14s for Man United? Not just there with a smile on their face and a picture of, you know, Wayne Rooney. They want their kid to play. They want their kid to get the opportunities. And when they see that Man United's facilities are shit and Man City's are brilliant, they'll take them to Man City. If Man City want them, they will go to other clubs. And we had a right battle keeping JJ at the club. Like, there was an expectation that he was going to go. Man United basically moved heaven and earth to keep him. We're not going to be able to do that all the time. And these players will leave because all we've really got is we're Manchester United. We're Manchester United. That's all, you know, that's all we can offer at the moment because our facilities are shit. And the youth is so important to Manchester United, and quite clearly to the ownership, it's not. I think that's disgusting. I think it's disgusting. And I know it sounds a little bit like I've turned up to football matches in the past where you've had to borrow kit from the other team. I remember playing for my school. We didn't even have a kit. We were playing in blue and I was wearing an Everton kit. So someone else was in an Ipswich kit. It was what blue kit could you get your hands on? Don't worry, my mum messed up. I wanted the Man United third kit. It was 1987 and she came back with the NEC V-neck. I said sharp blue neat V-neck. She came back with an NEC V-neck. Everton kit was my first kit. But look, the point is, we've all been there, but this is Manchester United. Manchester United should not be doing this. And people can say it's not that deep. It is. It is. Because Manchester City's facilities are incredible. And it's the same. It's different in youth football now, because if Man United have got a really good 13-year-old and he's having to wash his own kit and he hasn't got any shorts and socks, Newcastle can't come in and go, you fancy a move? You can't do that. Legally, you can't do that. Catchment areas now, you can't take players from different areas of the country until they're 16. But Man City can, because it's Manchester. So, and unfortunately, Man City have probably got the best facilities in the country when it comes to youth facilities, women's facilities, etc. So, we're idiots. We're idiots to be cutting costs on our youth setup, because we will lose these players to Man City. And that's what I see when I see this article with Laurie Whitwell this morning. When I see that it's not just about not having shorts and socks, having to wash your own kit and the facilities being shit. It's the fact that Man City are in the same bloody catchment area and will just pick off all our good players. And how does that get us back, Sir Jim? What is the plan? I mean, last night's show was brilliant about Bruno Fernandes. Tonight's show is about be above the manager, above the players. What is the plan of the football club? And this sort of leads nicely into it. What is their plan? We're cutting costs all over the place for the first team, and the first team isn't good enough. What is the plan of this football club? Because I don't know what it is. I really don't know. I look at the summer transfer window and I see 200 million spent on the attack and nothing spent on the midfield. What is the plan? We've cut half our workforce. Things are clearly a mess behind the scenes. We've built an amazing first team Carrington, but the youth set up shit. Can't even afford fucking socks and shorts. Our youth policy is going to get decimated. They're not a youth player if you sign them from Arsenal at 16. If that's the plan, that's not a youth player. A youth player is a Marcus Rashford. They come through the team from like 9 years of age. That's what a proper youth player of Manchester United is. So it's disgusting that we're cutting costs and not providing equipment to something that's been what our team is for approaching 100 years. A youth player of Man United is not somebody brought in from Arsenal at 16 or 17. A youth player is someone that's been here since before they were 17, 16. So, you know, it's not good enough. Stephen Barry says, do you think Garnacho was a United youth player? Borderline, because I think we brought him in at 16 from Atletico Madrid. Shane O'Hare says, Ince, Keane, Bruce Pallister, Robbo, McClair, all captains in one team. Yeah, look, at, but go beyond that. Roy Keane, Peter Schmeichel, Yap Stam, Gary Neville, David Beckham, Paul Scholes, Ryan Giggs. I know they were young, but I think they were all leaders. I really do. Get a good defensive midfielder in January like Belaba. Use Mainoo on loan for free to Brighton instead. Cost just $500,000. He would get playing time. I mean, Victor, a lot of people talk about that. You know, could Mainoo, Belaba, Man United do something in January? This is why we shouldn't just sell every player over 30. Who is mentoring? Lemens and Sesko need to realise some players are good to have off the pitch, says Jake M. And Forza says, I feel bad for Xerxes. He should have been sub in the last game. Just rematched. We watched game and Bruno was out of breath in the last 10 as well. Hello Houston, Texas says, does Bruno play the same position in the Portugal team? No. Nobeds will try and tell you that Bruno plays in the midfield for Portugal. He plays as an attacking midfielder for Portugal. They tend to play with a three and he tends to be the attacking midfielder. You don't want to get this illness I've had. It's so annoying. I feel like it's gone back a day today. Feel like I've gone throat and nasal again. Fed up a bit. Absolutely fed up a bit. Anyway, you've been great company. We're back at 2. 8 o'clock show tonight. It's going to be very good. It's basically called What Plan. We'll be talking about that at 8 o'clock. Last night's show was brilliant. If you didn't see it about Bruno, we've got some really good ones planned for you over the international break. And I look forward to your opinions. Take care, everyone. Stay safe. And I'll speak to you on the next one. I'm actually on Terry's channel now doing hot takes. So God knows what his hot takes are, but I'll be there at 11. I'll speak to you in a bit. Thanks for watching. Speak to you in a bit.